York and WBAI.org. We are transmitting, it is coming up on 5 o'clock and time for Back of the Book. Oh, I asked a question. When did you choose to be homosexual or to be heterosexual? And if you didn't choose, give that room to other people. Okay? And time for Back of the Book. They endorse hell for that endorsement.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
Oh, here it is. We're pretty damn sure it's 5 o'clock in the morning, and you're listening to All. I've been here for 41 years this month. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things in this program, and you could find out a little bit more about them by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And when you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame in the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of that, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that, and you will be brought to the webpage for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 113th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story about which the entire galaxy is really talking on Twitter. We have lost 2 followers on Twitter. We are now down to 125 followers again. Oh, it's still a huge number, and the entire Milky Way galaxy is following this story. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on this coming Wednesday, November 9th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. Go up to kpftx.org for details. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 632,163,042 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,599,111. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 97,714,211, and the death toll in America was 1,072,355. So 2,217 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program. which is slightly lower than the previous week's death toll. We know that the real figures are higher than that, but this is the information we have. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. This coming Wednesday will mark 2 weeks since I got my bivalent vaccination, so I should have built up maximum immunity at that point. Pickles has already built hers up to that point, because she got hers before I got mine. I didn't have any bad reactions to the vaccination, just a little soreness at the injection site, which I didn't notice unless I, like, rubbed that area of my shoulder. Pickles and I are bracing for what may be an autumnal surge.
Yes, R. Paul. I went up on the CDC's website and looked to see how the five boroughs of New York City are doing, and it looks like Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the Bronx are at medium, which is yellow. Yes, the CDC has really simplified things. Their alert system is green for low transmission rates of COVID, yellow for medium, and orange for high. So Manhattan and Brooklyn, medium, which is up from a couple of weeks ago where it was low. Pardon me, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the Bronx, I should say. Yes, I looked up the Bronx this time, and all three are medium. But Staten Island, Queens, yes, you've achieved the highest level of COVID transmission that we know of right now. So things are high there, and you're supposed to wear your masks going indoors in public spaces. Ha ha. I'm sure many people will be following this. There are a couple of variants, new sub-variants now that are racing through the city, and apparently they're causing 50% of the COVID cases. They're also going across the country. They're not at 50% yet, but just give it time, because here we are. The weather should be getting cooler. I mean, right now it's not here, but it will. And people will be gathering indoors to celebrate all kinds of things, and they will be giving each other COVID. Because unfortunately, the vaccinations, they will keep you out of the hospital for the most part, but they're not going to keep you from getting COVID. So I don't know at this point what to say about any of this, except go ahead and get your shots and wear a mask when you're in big crowds of people, like shopping or doctors or whatever like that.
Are there any names yet for the new variants?
Oh, gosh, I can't remember them now. There are.
Okay. I hope that the boosters and all will protect against them.
As I said just now, we'll keep you most likely from having to go to the hospital, but you can still get COVID. So,
all right.
Less likely to have a really bad case of it. So,
and by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. And this was all mostly preventable. This could have been stopped 3 years ago. But various people, for various reasons, did various things and didn't do various things. And we have it now. And speaking of pathogens and diseases, folks may remember that Pickles of the North had her cough last time. Is it a little bit better at this point, my dear?
Yes, it is. It only shows up later and later at night, so.
And as of the other day, I started coughing too. Although Pickles had a real thing, like when you started out, it was like a really bad cold, right?
I guess. I rarely get cold, so it's hard to remember. But yes, it was not good. It was not good.
And I haven't had that. I just started coughing the other day, and pretty much I can take care of it with cough drops. So, I don't know. I have less of it, or maybe I had something like it before, and maybe this is RSV or not. I know that I am not getting cold symptoms. All I've got is this upper respiratory bothersomeness, and that's it.
I know one of my little cousins in Canada, she's a kid, she's got it. And it is that, because they had her tested. And one of my first cousins also has this, too. And he's around my age. He's a little younger. And same symptoms and same duration. It just won't go.
Ugh. We've been saying we're going to talk about black holes for, oh, quite a number of programs. Well, here we go. We're going to plunge right into a black hole now and hope we don't disappear into it. Yeah, we've been finding out things because there's been a bunch of research done and new papers are coming out. And some months ago, scientists Tomer Shinar of Amsterdam University in the Netherlands and Karim El Badri of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics and some others announced the first discovery of a dormant black hole outside of the Milky Way. Now, dormant black holes are not absorbing matter from nearby stars or anything else that's big, so they're extremely hard to detect. Yeah, see, black holes usually have what's called an accretion disk, because they're usually swallowing things a lot of the time. And these dormant black holes don't have one. And an accretion disk is the only thing that emits light from a black hole. The way a black hole works is you've got the singularity, which is at the center of it all, and that's the actual black hole part of it. That thing is either infinitely small, a geometric point, as you may have learned in school, what a geometric point is. It has no dimension whatsoever. It's there, but it's unmeasurable because it's too tiny. And it's either that or it's smaller than a proton. And being smaller than a proton and having the gravity of something large, oh boy, it has some sort of mass, and being that small, the gravity is tremendous. And so you have the singularity, and then you have the event horizon. And the event horizon is the place where the gravity is so strong that even light cannot escape the black hole. And then around that, most of the time, you have what's called an accretion disk. And that's where various bits of matter, sometimes just stuff that floats by, sometimes if it's in a binary system where the black hole and a star are orbiting each other, it starts to steal material from the star because it's got a stronger gravitational force than the star has. And so it starts taking outer layers of the star off, and that stuff circles around it because there is still the conservation of angular momentum. And so it doesn't go just like zip directly into it or something, like you would throw something in a waste basket or something. It goes toward it. The matter goes toward the black hole, and it's probably not going to be precisely aimed at the center of it, which means it's a little bit off, which means it goes past it and circles around, and angular momentum is conserved. So you got this accretion disk with stuff flowing around the black hole, and since the gravity is even stronger toward the black hole as opposed to farther away from it, well, stuff collides, and stuff collides with great force, and it produces a lot of energy, and that's how you get a lot of light coming out of it. So this dormant black hole, which doesn't have an accretion disk, is part of a binary system called VFTS-243. One of the two objects that form VFTS-243 is a very hot blue star with 25 times the mass of the sun. So this is a pretty big star, and it's very hot. And the other component is a black hole that is estimated to be 9 times more massive than the sun. VFTS-243 is located in the Tarantula Nebula within the Large Magellanic Cloud, which is located about 163,000 light years from Earth. The Large Magellanic Cloud may or may not be a satellite galaxy of the Milky Way. Mostly everybody says, yeah, it is. They've been saying that for hundreds of years. However, there was an article a couple of years ago saying, you know, the way the large and small Magellanic clouds are moving, it looks to some scientists like they're not captured by the Milky Way galaxy and they're just passing by. So, I don't know. I guess the consensus right now, I think, is that they are. There is a large and a small Magellanic cloud. We're talking about something in the large one right now. And I think the consensus right now is they are satellites of the Milky Way, but we could find out something different. Anyway, that particular black hole's event horizon is estimated to have a diameter of about 33 miles. Now, that's extremely tiny. You've got this thing that weighs 9 times as much as the sun, and the sun is more than 99% of the mass of the entire solar system, so you could just laugh off all the planets and asteroids and everything else. Just the sun is what matters, and it's one solar mass, and this thing is 9 solar masses, and it's only 33 miles wide. Holy hell. So it's amazing when you think about the dimensions of some of these things. Now, the giant blue star that is also in this binary system is about 200,000 times larger than the black hole. The scientists investigating this dormant black hole used a technique called spectral disentangling to find that there was only one object emitting light in that binary system, and that was the big blue star. Since the scientists know that the blue star is orbiting something that weighs 9 times what the sun weighs, they have to conclude that it's a black hole. And they get the 33-mile dimension. They can't see that. But by doing calculations, they can figure out about where the event horizon is. And again, the 33 miles is the event horizon of that thing. If it had an accretion disk, it would be, they can be pretty big, an accretion disk. It depends on how much stuff the black hole is devouring. And they can be thousands of miles. If you count both sides, many thousands of miles. You can get like 1 million miles of accretion disk in some cases, and they can be very bright. Most black holes are thought to form after a large star explodes in a supernova, and some of its material toward the center of the star gets squeezed down into a black hole. Just as in stars that are not quite as big, it gets squeezed down into a neutron star, which is a whole nother weird thing up there in the universe. So they find that they're orbiting each other, the blue star and the black hole. But this VFTS-243 binary system has the two components in a circular orbit around a common center of mass. So the thinking is that a large star simply had what's being termed a direct collapse with no supernova explosion at all. I don't know how that happens. That's a new term for me. I thought they had to explode pretty much, but I guess that in certain situations, the star doesn't explode. It simply totally directly collapses into a black hole. What usually happens is the star has a lot of gravity, tremendous gravity, and with a very big star, what happens is it uses up its fuel and it can no longer generate a lot of energy, which is what counters the tremendous gravity. When the energy of the nuclear fusion in the star goes away, the gravity takes over immediately, and the whole star is crunched down into a smaller, smaller space. Usually what happens when that goes on is you get, well, there are two different kinds, a type 1A and a type 2 supernova. With a type 1A supernova, it's a smaller type of star, and it gets squeezed down, and it forms what's called a carbon detonation, because the star has made carbon and the carbon accumulates at the center. And when the star can't hold off against the gravity anymore, it collapses, and that collapse crushes what's at the center, which is the carbon. And instead of getting crushed into a black hole, which it can't do because it's too light, it explodes, and it, as they say, the carbon detonates. It starts to fuse the carbon, and the carbon getting fused lets out a hell of a lot of energy, and the smaller star can't contain that with the gravity, so blammo, it blows up, and you get a type 1A supernova. For a type 2 supernova, what happens is it's a bigger star. And it starts, you know, going through things, and all the elements we have, except for hydrogen and helium, and a little bit of boron, I think, or something. All of that stuff comes out of stars because you have fusion going on in the stars. In the center of, like, our sun, the sun is making helium out of hydrogen. And so it creates the helium, and that's going to go on for a long time. And stars all start doing that. But then some stars are heavier than the sun, and they start to fuse the helium. And it goes on through a progression of elements. And for a big star, it goes through a number of elements, and then it starts to create iron. And that's a crucial thing, because all of the other elements, when they're fused, release a lot of energy. When elements are fused to become iron, the process absorbs energy. So all of a sudden, instead of generating energy to keep the star from collapsing, now you've got the energy completely going. It's not just not there, it's absorbed, it's sucked into this brand new element, iron, and the collapse of the star is really accelerated. And in those cases, if it's a certain size star, it crushes down on the center and it becomes a neutron star. A bigger star crushes down and it becomes a black hole. And there are some really humongous stars that, it is theorized, just blow up completely and don't form anything else, but they just blast themselves off into space. That's a good thing for us because we're made of stuff from exploding stars. So we have this situation where one of the stars just had this direct collapse. And now they have proof that such things exist. It had been a theory. Now it's been found, one of them. And scientists believe that there are hundreds of binary systems with black holes that are essentially invisible in terms of emitting light and X-rays. And dormant black holes would be a bad thing to have show up in one's neighborhood in space. Such a black hole, if it were alone, would be undetectable. There are various ways where a binary system can interact and separate, or interact with some other system, and one part of the binary system gets thrown out all alone. So you could get something like one of these dormant black holes wandering the galaxy. Oh boy. And that would be bad news, because there would be nothing that could be done to detect such a thing. I mean, here we can detect that we have this blue star, and it's orbiting something that we can't see, and we know that the something is 9 stellar masses and has to be a black hole. And so also, if you had one of these dormant black holes wandering around, there would be nothing you could do to deflect it. And we've talked before about dangers to the solar system and the Earth. And we all know that, you know, if a big rock hits us, it is bad news time. However, there are other things, more esoteric things, less likely things, one of which would be a mini black hole. And it was theorized that these came about in the creation of the universe in the Big Bang. But it's also theorized that they have all evaporated by now. A mini black hole would have the mass of approximately Mount Everest, which sounds like, oh, that's not a whole lot. But Mount Everest is a pretty big object. And it's not just like the top of it. It's like it goes down a ways and it's really huge. And so something like that, which we now figure is not an actual real life danger, would be a bad news thing because you couldn't detect it. And if it were to like slam into the Earth, well, Mount Everest slamming into the Earth would be really unfortunate. Plus, you don't know, could it like do something like go into orbit around the Earth and then just suck the atmosphere off us? Well, that's the end of everything right there. Could do various different things. And another thing that has been theoretically said to not exist but had been thought to maybe exist is a naked singularity. Remember before I mentioned that the actual mass of the black hole occupies a space that's smaller than a proton, which of course is smaller than an atom, and something like that. Well, a naked singularity would also be undetectable if it didn't have an accretion disk. But the theory now is you can't get those. You can't get a naked singularity. It has to at least have an event horizon, which is that part where that boundary between the interior of the black hole and the rest of the universe, and light can't escape from it there. So those are some things that, besides a big rock, some of that stuff we don't have to worry about, but a direct collapse black hole without, or any black hole without an accretion disk, could be a danger. What would happen is it wouldn't have to slam into the Earth. It wouldn't even have to go into orbit around the Earth. In fact, most of them wouldn't go into orbit around the Earth. They would have the sun orbiting them. The problem there is, one, it could, again, suck the atmosphere off the Earth fast. And two, it would start rearranging the planets and the sun in the solar system. And, oh boy, that could cause a whole lot of problems. Imagine that Jupiter is suddenly trying to occupy the same space as the planet Earth. Oh, who's going to win that contest? Yeah. So, yeah, this is something that's showing up and is a new thing to worry about, except don't worry about it. One, it's probably never going to happen. Two, if it happens, you'll never know it. And so we now come to the September 2022 issue of Scientific American with all sorts of stuff about black holes. They've got three or four articles in here about black holes. One of the things which kind of bothers me is, well, being able to reverse things and saying that information cannot be destroyed, which goes against things I've thought for a long time. For instance, in computer stuff, we refer to the bit bucket. When you have computer data in any file you have, whether it's a text message or a photograph or a movie or the audio of this radio program, you have various bits that are arranged in bytes. The bits are arranged in a certain way to make bytes. The bytes are arranged in a certain way to make whatever. And right now, you may be listening to this radio program, and some bytes have been put together to form the audio. So what you're hearing is a bunch of bytes. Yes, we're biting you. One of the things that can happen is the data, the bytes and the bits, can get scrambled. And there is something called the bit bucket. And when the bit bucket, it just means instead of being all organized, your bits are in a bucket and they're random. And that's it. The information is considered lost. But here we have some physicists who are saying information is never destroyed. So I'm actually bothered by this. I prefer a universe where, yeah, you've got a bit bucket and the bit bucket is real and information can be permanently lost. Yeah, you know, that is, they've got a different idea. The scientists say the physical world can run both ways. And the information required to wind back a clock is always preserved. And I'm going to read from an article in that Scientific American by George Musser, who's a contributing editor at Scientific American. And he's written a book about spooky action at a distance, which is what Albert Einstein called entanglement in the quantum world. Basically, he says, yeah, the black hole does not seem to preserve information. But how could reversible laws have irreversible effects? And again, reversible laws are what physicists say exist in this universe. He goes on to say, scientists have many reasons to seek a grand unified theory of nature, but the information paradox is their most specific motivation. And it has guided their way when they have had little else to go on, unquote. And he's also talking about how with black holes, he says they're reversible and that they are being used to dissolve the paradox, the information paradox, and to say that physics is no longer at odds with itself. So the author of the article starts out talking about Stephen Hawking's theory about how black holes evaporate over time. And what happens there is, this is again, the quantum stuff comes in. There is the vacuum energy. And don't let anybody sell you a free energy thing that taps it. You can't do that. What happens is, all around us, there is so much energy in absolutely nothing. Matter and energy are equivalent, E equals mc squared, that at times, well, just about basically all the time, a bit of matter is formed spontaneously from the tremendous energy. There's so much energy that matter pops out. But then what happens is it has to preserve charge and things like that. And so what happens is you'll have typically an electron and a positron forming. An electron is, you know what an electron is, it's an ordinary thing, it carries electrical charge. A positron is basically an electron with a positive charge. So you have an electron and a positron, the electron's negative, the positron's positive, they weigh the same and they're alike in other ways, and they form suddenly. What happens is they form right next to each other and they have opposite charges, so they attract each other and they annihilate each other. The positron is antimatter, so you have a matter-antimatter reaction between this electron and the positron that just formed, and they annihilate each other and they become energy again. This is not a rare instance. This is going on everywhere. It's part of what creates what's called the quantum foam, which makes it so that precision is a little bit of a problem in some cases. And you want to say, well, it's like, does that happen in reactors? Well, yes, it does. It also happens all around you. It also happens inside you. In fact, this reaction is going on inside you right now. And these reactions, they're so small, they happen inside the nuclei of atoms. any place where there is space, or space-time as you should formally call it, any place where there is space, you've got little bits of matter popping into existence and popping back out again. This is going on all over inside you at a tremendous rate. One of the estimates I've seen is that if that energy could be tapped, the energy in a perfect vacuum that's about the size of, say, one pint of perfect vacuum, the energy that's in there, if you could tap it, would be enough to evaporate the Pacific Ocean. These reactions are going on everywhere. They're also going on at the edge of an event horizon of a black hole. So you have a black hole, and the event horizon is where light can't escape. Nothing escapes from that. And what happens is, at the very edge of the event horizon, one of the two particles will snap into existence from all the energy, but one of them will be inside the event horizon and the other will be outside. So one of them will be captured by the black hole. The other will not. And so it escapes into the rest of the universe. This is how Stephen Hawking said a black hole would slowly evaporate, because some of the energy and also matter is lost. And by doing this, the black hole is actually losing mass. It's hard to figure out. You say, well, didn't it gain one? No, it had the space-time. It had all of that. And then one part of it became matter and fell in, and the other part became matter and fell out. Because, again, you have to consider the energy in the vacuum. So it had it, and now it has half of it. And so this is an issue here. And that's what Stephen Hawking said would eventually evaporate a black hole. This, in his theory, this did not happen in a very rapid way. It takes rather a while for a black hole to evaporate. The author here, George Musser, says all the matter that the black hole imprisoned is not freed, but wiped out of existence in Hawking's theory. He says Hawking's analysis elevated a general unease into a full-fledged crisis for physics, because everybody wanted there to be information that didn't go away. But he says other people have started working on this, and one of Hawking's former students, Don N. Page, who's now at the University of Alberta, dug into this, and another physicist, Samir D. Mather of the Ohio State University, also dug into this, and they had some interesting ideas about Stephen Hawking's calculations. And they said, something's missing. And the key element to Page and Mather's analysis was quantum entanglement. Oh boy. For instance, you can have a reaction of a small particle. It splits. It splits into two equal parts. One goes one way, one goes the opposite way, and they can travel at the speed of light. And what you do is you detect one of the particles, and you can see if, like, it's spin or charge or whatever. You can see what specific property it has. And since it's one particle, it's split into two, the two particles have to be complementary. If one has a right-hand spin, the other has to have a left-hand spin, stuff like that. Scientists found that when they measured one, the other one was always the same. Now, the thing is, when it comes off the original particle, it breaks into two particles, you can't tell what the spins are. Or other properties, and some other properties are. You have to detect it. And what they were looking at was, well, the detection is that somehow communicating to the other particle how to spin. And this was a big thing for a long time. I always said it's inherent in the damn particles. You know, it's there in the first place. It's a little more complicated than that, because with the quantum, both particles have all the properties. So to some degree, it is like when you detect it, when you detect what the spin is, you are to a degree, communicating with the other thing, which is very far away and cannot be communicated with. And they've done experiments with this where they shoot particles back and forth through good distances. And they said, is this violating the speed of light? Is this going back faster than the speed of light? Does when we detect one particle, does it communicate to the other one at faster than the speed of light? This was something that had been debated about, and Albert Einstein didn't like this. He called it spooky action at a distance. And the thing is, for years I said, it's not really like that probably. But then it was figured out and it's been shown scientifically. It happens. And so it's there. And the reason is the quantum. And that is a bizarre thing. And it relates to black holes and how they deal with those particles splitting right on the edge of the black hole's event horizon. However, we have to go on to other things at this point in time, so we're going to save more of this for another program, and we're going to talk about black holes and quantum entanglement at another program. I think we'll pick it up again next week. I don't know. Are we going to be doing more than two programs on this? I gotta see. We'll figure this out. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. Remember, remember the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot.
I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Yes, and it is Guy Fawkes Day because it is November 5th. And what that little poem there refers to is an attempt to assassinate King James I of England and the Parliament. What happened was a guy named Guy Fawkes and his pals put a whole bunch of gunpowder underneath the place where they were going to meet. And they were going to blow them all up and kill them, but it was discovered. And so Mr. Fawkes and his pals met their end.
Yes, they were a bunch of pissed off Roman Catholics.
Of course, they had massive wars about this crap on those days, you know. Gee whiz, how many angels can dance in the head of a pin? And we're still remembering that this happened in the year 1605. So 417 years later, people are still celebrating all of this.
So I was wondering as I was looking at this, because, of course, growing up in Canada, this is not something we celebrated, but it's something, if you read British books, it's in your children's books. And it made me think, what 400 years from now will people say about January 6th, 2021? What kind of remembrance will there be of it? Right now, some people have written poems. There's been some songs. I shudder to think what the white supremacists have written about this. I mean, I'm sure there are some really bad, bad odes to the great victory of the people. Just like, you know, back in the, the 80s and 90s when you had the Nazi skinheads in punk bands doing all these rotten, awful songs espousing their nasty beliefs. But what will people be writing about January 6th? What will survive from that time? What will people be listening to on the tiny landmass that is left of North America? Most of it will be underwater, won't it, by then?
In 2639, what are they going to be celebrating or not celebrating about January 6th, 2021? Ah, yes, it's our dignified way of announcing we're going to pitch now. Ah, let's all get in here and start pitching. This is WBAI New York, listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio, coming out of Brooklyn. And we're here and we say we're listener-sponsored, non-commercial. That's not a slogan. That's an actual legal declaration. our money comes from you, the listeners. Of course, we need money. We got to pay rent. Oh, do we have to pay rent? We have to pay electricity bills. Can imagine a radio station has a lot of electricity bills and various other things, including paying some people. And very few people get paid around here, but we don't. Pickles and I don't get paid, but other people get paid. Some people make a living out of being here, and we need people to get paid so that they will stay here and do things like, oh, keep the radio station on the air. So we need to have money, and the only way we get it is through you. We ask you to support WBAI. And the way we do that is we ask you to get up, go to your phone, dial 1-212-209-2950. When somebody picks up the call at the call center, say, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, which is the name of this radio program. And what is a BAI buddy? A BAI buddy is the name we have for a sustaining membership in WBAI. Oh, here comes a train coming right by. It's the pitching train. The pitching train is coming through. And it's a support train for WBAI. We ask you to jump on the support train. And you do that by calling 1-212-209-2950. Yes, our sustaining membership is called a BAI buddy. And what happens with that is when you call 1-212-209-2950 and they pick up at the call center, you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And they will ask you how much you would like to donate per month, because it's a sustaining membership and you are billed monthly. You donate monthly this way, and you use your credit card or your debit card, and you tell them how much you would like to donate on a monthly basis. It could be $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you want. But I think $5 to $20 is pretty much what most of our listeners can afford. 1-212-209-2950. And you also tell them what day of the month you want your credit card charged. And that way you don't get the card charged at an inconvenient time. Your credit card or your debit card, either one of those, they'll take. 1-212-209-2950. And it is an absolute necessity that we raise money here. A part of what's happening is people are looking around Pacifica to say, what can we cut? It turns out that KPFK's building is going to be sold. It's our sister station, and they're in bad financial shape too. In fact, almost the entire Pacifica Foundation is in bad shape, and WBAI has been borrowing money from other stations for some years now to stay alive, and we can't do that anymore because the other stations are having their own problems. So, I mean, I think this may be temporary, but right now, temporary is, you know, right up against us. So we need to raise money, and we need to ask you to call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And we really appreciate it if you could do that. And you can also pledge a one-time donation, if you please. And on our last program, some people did that. And, oh boy, that's a good thing. And we want to thank George and Bonnie from Northport, who've pledged before. Thank you, George and Bonnie. That's really good. We really are helped by that. We also want to thank Michael from Valhalla, New York, not, you know, Valhalla where the, you know, Thor hangs out and stuff. And we want to thank Dorothy from Little Neck. So they've all contributed at the last program, and we thank you a lot. You're helping to keep us on the air, we hope.
Thank you all very, very, very much.
Good grief. Anyway, yes, so we want to thank them. We also want to thank Tony, who contributed a couple of months ago. And I'll thank Seth, who was our friend and who donated earlier this year. You can join them. If you want to become a BAI buddy or make a one-time donation, call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to make a donation or become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And the person at the other end at the call center will probably be able to talk you through that if you need it. And again, you tell them how much you want to donate every month. 1-212-209-2950. And if you become a BAI buddy, you get a WBAI tote bag. You'll be the envy of everyone when they see you walking down the street with a BAI tote bag filled with, I don't know what the hell you fill the thing with. Anyway, filled with the books. It used to be a book bag, but then it became a tote bag because culture said it's a tote bag now. I used to have a tote bag, book bag. It was a book bag then, and I used to take it to work. I didn't have a briefcase, and so I went to work with this tote bag, book bag from a certain public TV station, and that's what I used to go to work with. Eventually, I earned enough money to buy a briefcase for like $8, and so... They didn't pay me a hell of a lot of money. 1-212-209-2950. All right, we really do need to have some folks call us up here. 1-212-209-2950. We need to hear from a few of you right now. 1-212-209-2950. We'll get you either a one-time donation, or you can become a BAI buddy and become a sustaining member of WBAI and show management. We do have listeners. Management actually emailed to tell me that we have George and Bonnie and Michael and Dorothy to thank for letting management know we do have listeners, because management was saying, you don't have any listeners. And if you're a radio program, you don't have any listeners, they're liable to take you off the air.
I do believe in listeners. I do believe in listeners.
And yes, we believe that you are listeners out there. And you can help us out and prove to management we've got more listeners by calling 1-212-209-2950 and say, yes, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And, you know, if you're going to do $5 a month or something like that, that isn't that difficult, I think, for most people. You know, and so it would help. 1-212-209-2950. I know we don't have a ton of listeners, but we've got a few of you out there. 1-212-209-2950. And say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. We do strange radio things here on this program. If you've been listening to us, you just heard a whole bunch of science stuff that's kind of off the wall because it involves the quantum and all of that, which is always off the goddamn wall. So, yeah, we're talking about black holes. We're talking about things slamming into the earth. And, oh, yeah, fun things like having the atmosphere sucked off the planet by a black hole or something. Anyway, yes, we talk about these science topics, and we want to talk about more of them, and we can do that if people will call 1-212-209-2950 and say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. We had two BAI buddies. One of them unfortunately passed away. That was Pat Logan. We had another BAI buddy. I don't know if that person is still a BAI buddy. Sometimes things happen and for whatever reason, people become not BAI buddies. But I don't know if we have any right now. I think we may not. But you can become our BAI buddy. 1-212-209-2950. Please call that number now. Say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. Final time, 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call there. Thank you if you do. By the way, we're going to have a lunar eclipse on Tuesday, November 8th. Totality starts at 5:16 a.m. and ends at 6:41. Look to the west, and you will see the moon getting all darkened up and then maybe coming out of it, depending on where you are. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back here next week. And what's coming up next, my dear?
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
I voted, by the way, and voting is a good idea, people. All sorts of stuff going on. Voting is a good idea. You should all enjoy the warmer weather that's coming up this week. Look at the fall foliage that's turning colors. And above all, remember what that watching the quantum stuff go on for 41 years here, Dormouse said.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible for local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, November 9th at 7 p.m. As we exit COVID lockdown economic disruptions, it's immediately essential that the Pacifica Network stations, WBAI included, find their financial footing. If we fail to distinguish ourselves, increase our donating listener audience, our already shoestring budget and overstretched staff will likely be cut. Vitally important assets may get sold. We're working to ensure that a robust WBAI 99.5 FM remains where you can find it on the dial. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, November 9th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Again, the meeting ID, 922-457-2995. And as if that isn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency. So it's 995-995-99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we really need you to. Thank you.
Hi, this is Leonard Lopate, host of Leonard Lopate at Large, weekdays at 1 p.m. I want to encourage my listeners to become Lopate at Large WBAI buddies. You can become a buddy, a sustaining BAI member, for as little as $10 a month. Please go to give2wbai.org or call 516-620-3602. And thank you.
Funny, this radio hasn't been working very well the past 2 days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you.
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoons at 6 here on WBAI.
That should be time for our favorite program.
Yes, just about time. I should have been back here a long time ago.
What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
Time passed. Many romantic feelings were associated with radio broadcasting. As with aviation, with motoring across the far western United States.
50 years ago, a young genius made a classic that could never be retold. Now it must be told again.
I tried to conduct myself in this campaign in a way that would divide our country, divide it regionally or by parties or in any other way. Because I very firmly believe in those things which divide us.
We are all continually involved with the